I want to go down that bottom left corner and talk about being non-engaged, emotionally present, but physically present and engaged. Interesting. I labeled that the stoic son, meaning not moved by much emotionally. This tends to bring about a son who has a limited awareness of deeper things. Pretty stoic. I had actually thought about, this is a father who, again, looking at it from a dad's standpoint, a father who's very involved physically, doing a lot of stuff with his son, that kind of thing, but not really engaged in the heart. Let me make one statement here, that generally speaking, as we grow older, depending on where we've been wounded, we will default back to how we've been wounded. That's why I'm saying, that's what I want us to get in touch with today. I'm thinking of a young man I know who's a good friend of mine. We were both in Vietnam together. Again, this is somewhat disguised. He was with the 9th Division. He was a Pathfinder commander. Call him Bill. Bill was had a father who was very, very involved with him physically. He was a man of the woods, if you will. And if Pathfinder groups attached to like the 9th Division, part of the aviation battalion, they would go out and they would clear landing zones. They would go and recon and clear landing zones, that kind of thing. So it was a pretty dangerous mission. And people who didn't know Jesus would probably say, Bill beat the odds. He later came to Christ. But he grew up with a father who was very, very much involved with him physically. He was, like I said, a man of the woods. We ran into each other in Vietnam, and it was a wonderful experience for both of us just to connect. We talked nothing about the war. We just talked about our boyhood days. I knew him on the side. I wanted his dad to be my dad. But in reality, as I talked to Bill later, I found out that his dad had no heart connection with him. So Bill had a hard, hard time in his marriage entering into the deeper things of life, had a hard time offering compassion. Very difficult. Was he a true warrior in the sense of his time? He really was. I mean, and yet there was a piece of him that was missing with his dad. And so he was very competent type of guy. But he really struggled with compassion, and he struggled with compassion in his marriage. And so that's what comes out of a situation where you have a non-emotionally present father. And I tried to make that, here it is. My son, Wesley, I want to make sure I tell this story because it illustrates some pieces here. I came out of I'm the abandoned kid, right? And so I'm going to be involved with my kids physically. I mean, I was there. But as I said earlier, I was not present emotionally. My son Wesley, good athlete, was in eighth grade. He became very suicidal. He's a very deep thinker. He's doing well today, married, two kids, one on the way, excellent musician, works in a prayer ministry in the South. So I go into action. I'm a therapist in the city. I'm well known. I've been there a while. I make a phone call to the school. I get the principal involved. I get the teachers, the coaches that he's had involved. They really come alongside him, and he gets through it. So now fast forward to right before his marriage, he's going through some pre-marriage work with someone we know. We recommend that he see. They actually were part of our training and everything. And so one of the taskings was to be able to, before marriage, to be able to walk into some stuff with your dad or mom that you haven't walked into, just to kind of clean things up as best you can. And so he brought me back to that story, and he said, Dad, you know, you really set things up for me. I was really, really hurting. And those guys got involved with me. They were great relationships. They were there. They were present for me. But what I needed was you. And you weren't there. So you see, I knew how to set everything up. I knew how to put everything in motion. I mean, I was all at all his games, and we played basketball together until I was in my 50s and hurt my knee and all that stuff. But we did stuff together. a lot of things together physically, but not entering his heart. So that left a big hole for him. Is there a way that was there some healing through our me being able to say, you're right, I wasn't there for you. I was not there for you. And we talked, more than talked through that. But so I leave you with that, saying that the idea of entering your son's heart, and like, how about sitting with my son? You might say, what does that look like? Wes, I know you're struggling. I know we've talked to some, you're really concerned. Tell me what's going on. Let's just go for a walk and talk about this a little bit. I didn't do that. That causes some problems when we're not connected emotionally. It's not about the fact that emotions are for, it's all about, it's just all for women. David was a poet. Wallace himself, Braveheart. He was a man of letters, so to speak. He was definitely a man who had the other side to him. And so, like I say, it is very important to enter. And entering the heart is being able to ask questions and draw someone out about what's going on inside them, understanding that we're all thirsty and there can be confusion. And sometimes just being present with our children is important. Talking about the stoic son, that's a son who isn't moved by much.
You were sharing some illustrations as we talk about that. There may be situations, or some of us may have experienced situations where, like you're talking about, you're physically present, you're engaged. There isn't that emotional connection, but when you try and do that, it seems like that doesn't happen. What are some things that help that emotional connection that's going to bridge that gap? I'm asking the question right or not.
I know what you're asking exactly, and one of the things is to be in touch with your own woundedness, to walk into your own woundedness. You'll never be able to understand the wounds of another person. And I often get things bulleted at me, heat-seeking missiles saying, forget the past and move on, and I get Philippians 3 thrown at me. But let's go to Hebrews, where... Who's Jesus? He's the one who's experienced all the pain and sorrow, right? But until we, in other words, he did experience pain, sorrow, suffering, abuse, and shame, did he not? So therefore, he is able to what? Right. And so unless we get into our own story, unless we're able to walk through our wounds, find healing, move on, and find out how we've also wounded, that's part two. It's really hard to enter. I had a hard time entering my son's life because I never really, I denied my emotion. I mean, I walked away from the pain in my life, in the wounds as a young boy with my dad. I also lost 8 to 10 years of my life because of alcohol. I lost those years because I lived in denial. So, in other words, walking into the pain, the model being Jesus, he did walk into that. So he can understand. So as I begin to come to grips with my own sorrow, and hopefully that's done younger than later. In my case, I'm not the example, I'm the warning. But, and I say that, you know, no shame. So that's my, I don't know, does that make sense to you?
I was just trying to think with that, because I think that there are times that, and sometimes you want to connect with us, but it seems like the connectedness may not be there. One of the things that immediately comes to my mind is during the time my son was in high school, one of the things we do is we get together, he loved Burger King, so we get together at Burger King. The one thing that I look back that was helpful is that it really did help the relationship. But we'd get together about every week, he'd eat a couple of meals, and it didn't always happen, but sometimes, for instance, like we'd like to read through Proverbs, and you ask the question about, did anything stand out to you? And it's kind of like, where does it go? There's times you want to connect emotionally, and then I would say that I've not been really effective at being able to connect at that level.
I understand what you're saying, and here's the deal. you've got to be able to, okay, I'm going to a very practical side, you've got to be willing to ask open-ended questions of like what's going on in your life right now that's really been hard for you. Does that make sense? Okay, this happened with my 9-year-old granddaughter not too long ago. I was sitting with her at it was Wendy's. She loves Wendy's. And I said, Ashton, hey, how's your year been at school? We talked, and she's all into kind of stuff. And her and I just did 2 hours of shopping together at her favorite store. And I said, what's been hard for you? 9 years old, already thinking formal operations. She goes, she mentions two people's names, Aaron and his wife, and their kids had left the church where my son pastors. And I said, what's that been like for you, Ashton? She said, it's been very hurtful. I spend a lot of time crying by myself in my room. Do you see what I'm saying? What's going on that's bad for you? I mean, for instance, my dad could have said, hey, how are things going at school? I would have said, Dad, I hate high school. I hate all of the badgering by the coaches for me to have me play for them, like football or basketball. I mean, I had some talent. I hated football. I don't like to get my face smashed in. But that was, I mean, actually, I hated high school. I wish someone would have asked me, like, son, hey, what's been going on? I notice you come home from school every lunchtime. You never hang out at school. Your mom tells me that kind of stuff. It's called being an observant parent, observing your kids and entering in. And when you feel inadequate, you enter in. If you think through, I don't know if I want to do this, but there are events in life that happen to our children. Events. And if you go back using an old model that Larry Crabb uses, if you've seen some of this, and when an event happens, there can be some emotions attached to the event. Okay, what was the event in my granddaughter's life? A family left the church. She was close to the kids. She also loved the parents because they were teaching her. They were there from the founding of the church. It's a 10-year-old church. She was hurting. My granddaughter, I say, what did you do with her? I just said, Ashton, I'm so sorry. Let's pray together a little bit. She did. And she still cried. And so I went and talked to my son and daughter-in-law and said, do you have any idea about the impact that this has had? And they said, well, yeah. I said, spend some time, more time with her. And so she felt emotions, pain for her. What did she do? She cried. She did some, she just went to her room and she did some behavior here where she went to her room. And I just asked that, what do you do with that? Can't even spell, guys, sorry. But because she still has a little heart down here, what you might call the thirsting heart, she still is a very thirsty girl or young person. And you want to be able to connect thirst and emotions. The thirst is about our longings and our soul for having some kind of meaning and purpose in life and also to be loved unconditionally. Or when those things are disappointed, then that's where you enter. Does that make sense? I give you that example, which kind of surprised me because I expected not that kind of answer from her. Okay, I'm going to give you another example because I haven't done much with girls, so I'm trying to bring more of the girl thing here, right? and it's okay to do this. I had a 9-year-old a military family came to see me because I work with military families. That's one area I still maintain a practice in because I want to support our military. They're really hurting right now, desperately. Too many deployments. And so this was a result of a lieutenant colonel in Afghanistan way too many times. Daughter came in, presenting problem was hitting, kicking, biting mom when mom tried to put her in timeout. Okay, let's just do some behavioral stuff, right? No. Even at a 9-year-old, you try to get into her heart. So I began to meet with her a little bit individually, and we began to talk about things and begin to piece things together, begin to ask her, what's it? Her dad would go on deployment for 3 months or so. I forget what that Air Force mission is, but 3 or 4 months. And these behaviors seem to happen, they seem to happen right before that. That was the data. And so we talked through that a little bit, brought dad in and began, they haven't talked about it. I mean, just the idea of dad being able to say, sweetheart, I know I'm going, and what's this? What's it like for you when I go? And she would have told him, I'm afraid you're not going to come home. And she voiced that to me, brought dad in, and had her voice that to him. And you're thinking, that's a no-brainer, right? I'm sorry, guys. It's not a no-brainer. We're like dumb sheep. I'm one of them. Here's the deal. Let me give you the other piece of this girl's story, but some things still keep going on with her. Things get better with her and Dad and him going. He really responded. This dad really responded. And it made a difference. The other piece was, I asked her, I said, oh, you know, as we've been talking, your mom says you're very angry a lot. Could you talk to me about your anger? What, I don't understand what that is. And she finally says, you know, I'm so angry at my sister. I said, yeah, I kind of get that. And she just goes on and she says, I'm just so angry by her. I said, well, what's so hurtful for you? Can you tell me? And so it took a few sessions to do this. And she said, you know, my sister goes off to school before I do, and she hugs mom and dad and my other sibling, and she never hugs me. Sounds pretty simple, right? This little 9-year-old, I said, oh my gosh, what do you do with that? And she goes, I go to my room and I put my head on my pillow and I cry at night. Your mom know? No. Dad know? No. Nobody knows. So here we go, and this is all to answer your question about entering. So, because remember I said, David wasn't a very reflective parent. I was not a very reflective parent about what was going on inside of me. My fears and everything got in the way. So what happens is I ask this little girl to do something that I very seldom see a little 9-year-old do, or 10. Not that I work with kids that much, but I'm a family therapist, so I do the whole family, mom, dad, 3 kids. Sometimes a little bit of work with each, but here's the deal. I said, you know, are you willing to trust God with something? And she said, yes. She knows Jesus. And I said, this is going to be really hard. She says, okay. Could you tell your sister how hurtful that is for you? And she said, yeah. That young girl told her sister, and by God's grace, Lord Jesus, by God's grace, her 15-year-old sister responded. And began to, and it's, you know, she responds, says, you know, you're right. I'm sorry that I'm sorry I hurt you. And she began to move toward her sister, give her sister hugs when she went to school. And all of a sudden, you get this, all of a sudden, we don't have a kicking, screaming, biting little girl. When you see kicking, screaming, biting things, you know, burning Joab's field and people doing stuff like that, that's signal behavior. That's like, oh, there's something going on down here in the thirsty soul. And it's a matter of engaging the thirsty soul, not giving directions, not quoting verses, although you need to know the word now. But I mean, it's like, you know, you shouldn't really be feeling this way, you know. After all, you know, most girls don't go to the prom until their 11th or 12th grade. You shouldn't be hurting over this. This woman actually said that. I protected her, but I won't now. Anyway. This is tough. That's difficult. Let me tell you, the other part of this is what kind of a daughter might this come out of this non-emotionally present but physically present and engaged. It could be. I've checked. I mean, I've kind of did some interviews on this, and the vacant daughter. But it's a daughter who's just not necessarily there, who comes out to be pretty darn competent. Very competent. I know a young lady in our fellowship that we have, and she's very competent. Straight A's, give her any class, do anything, the perfect teacher, everything. But when you talk to her, she just glazes over. She's not there. She's not present emotionally. She never had a father. She had a father who was very much involved with her physical presence and involved and engaged, but he didn't offer, there wasn't any heart connection. So she began to long to be, I think, drawn to a man where she could have some kind of an impact. But what does that look like? How do you have impact with a daughter? I mean, you need to go do things with a daughter that she likes to do. Go take her to tea parties or take my granddaughter out to a place in Tucson where she just likes to look at little, I don't know, these glass cases with all these little things in them. And we could spend 2 hours in there. 2 hours. I mean, actually, the 2 hours went really fast because to see my granddaughter's delight in what she likes. But it does require some involvement. I mean, I wish I mean, I'm missing her even now as I think about it. Her and I are overdue for a time like that. But the gal that lives with us that I have permission to share this, she said, you know, her dad was there present, all, you know, he was there with her, but she was dating a guy, and she said, I wish my dad would have sat with me and say, I'm really concerned, could we talk about your dating relationship with Jacob? And he never did, and she said, I wish he would have. I just so wish my dad would have sat with me and said that, and she said, I would have then told him how bad it was, and I wish he would have then probably would have said, you need to stop dating Jacob, he's really bad for you. He's violating you. Young girls want that. And we don't connect real well at the heart level, and I don't know, that's... I want to make it clear, there is a chapter in this book that actually does have some good questions, in one of the chapters that you could ask. But I think what you need to have the understanding of this basis, you need to connect with the thirsty soul. But up front, you look at events that happen and you wonder, oh, that must have been hard for you. You know? Must have been hard. I don't know. Okay. The vacant daughter, all right. I'm going to tell you one other story that has a relationship to I want you to this story is about me again, but it's about trying to get you guys in touch with the vows that are made, the images that are formed, and how the enemy can use them to destroy us, as John was talking. When I was about 14 or 15, I think I was 15, the swimming club that I was with went to Cleveland, Ohio, big meet. I trained all summer for this meet. Big meet, so to make the finals was a big deal. So I made the finals in like three events, and unfortunately, everyone else on my team that was there didn't even make the finals. And so I had a chance probably for a medal in three of the events, but probably a third. And my coach came up to me and said, you know, no one else is really qualified. Your chances at medaling are probably bubble. We're all heading home. It's about a 70-mile drive to where we lived. And he said, let's just pop out of here. Well, I'd made more of a commitment than everybody else, and I trained hard. And I said, I'm going to stay here. He said, how are you going to get home? And I said, well, I have an aunt who lives in Cleveland, which was true, but I didn't know how to get a hold of her. And so I stayed by myself. Again, I fit bottom left, or top left, the abandoned son. I'm okay to be alone. I'll be off in my corner. I'll come up to the blocks. I'll swim my events. I didn't medal. Pretty much stayed about where I qualified. But I chose to do that. I thought that was a pretty manly thing on my part, but I was scared to death. How am I getting home? Well, I guess I'm going to hitchhike. So I start to walk out to where I would have to do that, and a car pulls up. They know me, and the man who was driving the car was Dr. Muter and Mr. LeBaugh. Both of their sons were competitors. I was very fiercely competitive with one of the sons. He medaled, and I didn't. It was a close race in there. He was third. I was fourth. And I looked in there, and these people from the wealthier part of where I live, and they said, John, are you okay? You need a ride. I don't know who told them I needed a ride. Maybe my coach did. I don't know, but I said, sure. But I felt huge shame. Number one, where's my dad? I get in the car. We drive toward Youngstown, Ohio. We get near my home, about maybe half a mile from my home. I said, you know, I'm really tight. I need to just take a little jog home and stretch. And oh, hey, we'll take you right to the door, man. I didn't want him to see where I lived. We didn't live in a bad house. I just felt so much shame. I think now I know the shame was more about my dad wasn't. Where was dad, so to speak? Okay, but the image of me walking down that street carrying my duffel bag, being all alone, is something the enemy uses. He said, "That's who you are. You are alone. Nobody cares for you." Nobody wants to hear from you. And so that's my image. But that's not the image that God has for me. And that's the battle. So every wound, there's an image and there's a vow we make a vow. I will never be seen again like that. Get out of my way. I will punch you out. I will do everything I can. So I become very distant. You can talk to my wife about that. That we're even married is a miracle. I've distanced her and everybody else. And I'm sure John would attest to some of that. So that I'm trying to tell you that you form an image. There's way too much to do in this workshop. I just want to get you guys aware of deeper things. You all have a story, by the way, too. Let me just go to the last piece here. Becoming a son of strength, becoming a secure daughter. That's where you've got emotional presence, physically present and engaged. Wow, that'd be great, huh? There are some of you probably in this room that came out of homes mostly like that. Every home is a little dysfunctional, but what kind of people do that build? Well, I'm thinking of a person named Steve Tracy, who I have some permission to share a little bit. Him and his wife, he teaches at Phoenix Seminary. He's a prof. They have a ministry called Mending the Soul Ministries, and he is in Africa, in the Congo, which is he goes to Africa often. He just was there for about 2 weeks or three, which is the rape epicenter of the world. If a woman is raped there, even if she's part of a church, she is thrown into the streets and some of the churches and shamed. And Steve and his wife, her health is, anyway, she hasn't been going recently. But he came out of a home where it was mostly this quadrant. You know, and he's a man who's an incredible writer. They've written materials. They work a lot in this whole area of the sex slave trade stuff. They've done some trainings in Portland, which is another major city where that takes place right now. That's a huge problem in our. I mean, it's bigger than you think. Just go talk to some law enforcement buddies or friends that you have. So what I want you guys to come away with today is a vision for developing children who are sons of strength, daughters who are secure. A woman, Lydia was saying, becoming a woman who can enjoy others and be enjoyed by others, offering vulnerable strength, and a son who's able to punch into his world, face fear, offer his heart, and not back down. And really be a son or daughter who really does free captives. Our ministry, Journey Companions Ministries, is that's what it's about. We want to bring people to freedom who already have a call, but sometimes get sidetracked because of history and other things that go on. Freedom is what it's about. I mean, and when I think of the word freedom, you know, everyone quotes the Braveheart thing, but that part of that movie with me is an image in my head at the end of that movie when he cries with everything he has in him, freedom. And the enemy wants to bring about bondage. Man, we've got to step up to the plate. I don't care if we strike out. We've got to start swinging bats. I mean that's, we don't. And I'm just trying to say, Jesus said, I and the Father are one. Well, there was such connection there, wasn't there? And I want that with my son. And I want to give one other piece of encouragement. In one of my recent ties alone with God, and there are very early morning hours because I can't sleep, not because I'm so spiritual, but when I get up and I can't sleep at 4:30, I realized with my youngest son, Wesley, I had shared some things with John, and John will attest, I was obsessed with how he was doing, and I was concerned that he wasn't doing this and that, and every time we talked, we related at this level of, you know, have you checked this? Have you done this? And I finally went, I came to the realization that I have been sinning against my son, and he has chosen to move in a ministry direction that is very uncomfortable for me, but that is not off base. And because of that, I've tried to control him. This just happened within 3 weeks ago. And the Holy Spirit in my heart, you need to call your son and you need to give him your blessing. And you need to ask him to forgive you for controlling his life and living at a level of distance with him. So I called him. He lives in the South. And I asked him, I did that. And I prayed a blessing over him on the phone. dedicating him to his work and his call. And he said, at the end of that, he said, Dad, I never thought you would ever do that. And he was pretty teary about it. I never thought this day would ever come. Our relationship is different. I'm not obsessing about things. When we talk now, and we talk frequently, we talk about real stuff. Not about him not fixing the car, not doing that, not taking response. I mean, I know, there I am. I'm 68. I'm still trying to. But I'm free of that. I say that to say you can have an impact. Even when you're older, you can move toward healing. It's a matter of how much do we want to really listen to the Holy Spirit. There's more I want to say, but I want to go around the room. And I would like you to start at the back. And I just want you to react, not to my style of teaching, but react to what's going on in your heart as you've been in these times. What's the Spirit of God stirring in you?
I think for me, I have four children. The oldest one's about to be 8, the youngest one's 2. And me personally, I'm in the business world, and I've always been trying to get that next carrot, I guess, get that next promotion. And here you talk today about the non-present, the person who is physically present, the person who is emotionally present, and non-emotionally present. It's really kind of the core with me that the more you work, the harder you try to get to that next rung, that takes away from something. And right now, at this point in my life, that's probably not the most important thing. I need to be there physically, I need to be there emotionally. My kids, because I only get one shot to do it while they're at home. And they'll be gone. I won't have that again. So that's one thing that's really been coming through. And then also when you talked about, I don't know why this started to go over with me, I have 3 boys and a girl. She's about to be 8. You said, hold your adolescent girl. I'm one of those guys that have been like, no, I'm not going to touch her. But I think she probably needs that. I think she needs me to hug her. I think she's only 8 now, but I think she probably needs me when she's 14 to put her in my lap and give her a hug. And I can't think it's weird, I guess. Even though right now, I think it's a little weird. But you're off problem now. But I need to say it even when she gets to that point.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
I think probably the biggest thing that I guess not letting the world choke out that relationship. I have 2 kids.
Not letting the world choke it out, okay.
What's that?
Not letting the world choke it out.
One's 3 and one's 1.
Okay.
And, the job that I work is such that I'm away for 24 hours at a time.
Right.
And then I come back and you've got 24 hours to get done anything that you need to get done before you're gone again for 24 hours. And when you were talking before about the being present, but just kind of dragging your kids along, it's not uncommon for me to throw the kids in the car, take them on my errands, getting done what I need to get done, but not really entering into their lives. I do enter into their lives at some point, but it's also sometimes where it's just kind of like the world and things that I see as a priority for me to get done. Going to choke that out. So it's kind of a real call for me to, maybe pick one thing that needs to be done today. Having kids is a big blessing, and being able to invest in their lives is even bigger.
Yeah.
So just taking the time to do that.
I think also our wives are so helpful to be able to get together and be able to say, babe, what are you seeing going on with the kids right now? What kind of engagement do you feel like I want to be engaged with? You can talk about what you picked up here, but our wives are part of this too. So, okay, thanks. Just what's going on? What's being provoked? That's my question. What's being provoked in you?
A lot.
A lot, okay. Maybe one or two things.
So looking at my own life and seeing the effects that I've had seeing that my father not being there has had an effect on me. And both how I relate with people and how I relate with relationship is a disconnect for me. I feel like if we meet brothers through this, all of them have really needed a place in my life, and so I can do it on my own. I don't really need their example, I don't need their help. And so, like, not letting the enemy just hide these thoughts in my mind, but like, stand against it. And working with now my father's back.
Yeah, and my son came to me and said, which by God's grace, I want to have a relationship with Dad. I don't know. And so that's when we started meeting. I mean, anyway, so you can also initiate that.
Well, I guess I really wish that my dad could be around more, since my mom and my dad are kind of divorced. And so, not being there is kind of
really tough. Yeah. Wow. Can we take a time just to pray for you right now on that? Could you pray for him? Both of you guys? I mean, both granddad and could you do that? Like where'd the time go? I remember sitting in the middle of the living room when the kids were all gone, or getting up in the morning and walking by their rooms. And some of you have experienced this, and you think they're still there, and then you realize, oh, they're gone. Yeah. Or sitting in the middle of the room lamenting lost time. You guys, some of you guys hear it early enough, and you won't have to go through that as much. But anyway, thanks. Dwayne.
I'm probably, to some extent, a little bit like John. Jim, I'm just trying to think through some of the things that that you're describing. My youngest two daughters, both of us have things that are going on in their lives right now. And so trying to figure out how do I enter into some of those, and yet, as an example, my youngest daughter this last year has gone to South Dakota. I had four in college. The youngest two were in college, one in South Dakota State University. And she was really homesick in the fall with that. And I thought it had been solved by Thanksgiving time. And then she went back after Christmas, it was worse.
Wow.
And so, recognizing they have to make the decisions, but I don't want to be unattached, but I don't want to make the decisions for her either in the process. So trying to figure out how am I involved and understand emotionally and give the freedom for her to make the decision, not that she feels like it has to be Papa's decision with that. And so some of those I'm just trying to process through a little bit.
What do you want to say to her? She's right here. What do you want to say to her?
Oh, I would say the same thing that I have said to her. I said, it's your decision. We'll support you 100%.
But she's homesick.
She's probably going to move this next year back and go to school.
How do you engage your heart, though?
I guess that's...
Because that's not engaging your heart.
The question, that's probably the question that both of the younger two, is because I say that there's things that are going on in their life, and I feel like we have pretty open communication with that. And they share, I don't know. I don't know that I really have the answer to that. To that, in terms of how do I engage the heart? That's probably why I asked the question.
You sit with her. I mean, I don't mean to be. I just want to be helpful. I want to get her. Just enter that with her. Talk a little bit with me about what's this been like for you to be at school and with all these feelings. Very open-ended question. Anything go on for the next hour?
Well, she'll talk. And she called the phone yesterday. We probably talked for about an hour, and I listened to some of the things that were going on. She just shared very freely in terms of that.
I'd be curious. You need to be curious, George, when you're dealing with kids. Like, you really want to wonder. You kind of wonder. Like, I'm wondering, like, what kind of events are going on at school that provoke her thinking and... What is she thinking? What does she do when she has those feelings? you know, I mean, does she just cut class? I'm not saying, I mean, in other words, entering into her world and be I mean, most of you guys probably are into sports to some degree. Ever watch a good sports interviewer? Ever watch a good TV interviewer? They're very curious. They can almost be annoying. But that's, we don't want to be annoying, but we want to enter in to, you know, her heart. I mean, that's a big deal for her. She's hurting, and she wants, you know, I don't know what's going on with her, but I'd be just...
Yeah, see, I think, and so that's what I'm saying. I am in some ways trying to process, because at this stage, there needs to be, she needs to also be making some steps toward independence. Seeing that is, there's a difficult balance for me, because I don't want her to become dependent, you know, in an unhealthy way. I want her to go on ahead. But what you're saying is right. I want to engage her heart and listen to that. And I have been trying to do that.
Just engaging your heart is just asking her how she's feeling. You're not taking away any independence. I see that hand.
Address the idea of how we truly solve everything rather than just.
Well, go ahead. It's fine. I mean, address it. Address how we try to solve. Yeah. Well, lead me along here. In general, when we're presented with things, we as men, more than anything, want to solve the problem. Let me tell you what you need to do, Wesley. This is what you need to do. And that's very disrespectful to them. Okay? We don't want to tell them what to do, because that's more easier for us. It's more difficult to enter in and ask what's really going on. Trying to solve things is not the movement. I do understand, I don't know if you want me to say more about that. I mean, the thing is I do understand the intricate balance here, and I'm not going to get to it today, but it has to do with the last page of Styles of Parenting. And what happens, you can have a very enmeshed home. That can be a home that's where you are high, so to speak, high responsiveness in offering, you know, offering grace and justice and involvement with your kid, but at the same time, if it's way too much, then they're very dependent. They don't move toward independence. However, what I'm sensing, like in your daughter's case, is just sitting down with her and entering into her world emotionally and letting her talk a little bit about what's been hard for her and what, you know, what is it like for her to have been there alone? What does she do when she's alone? You know, I mean, are you with me on this? Or?
Yeah, and actually, I've done it. In other words, to a great extent, in other words, with that both Anna and I,
okay.
I've tried to talk with and tried to connect with her and let her share that and share mm-hmm. you know, feelings and things that are going on. It's a great opportunity. She says that in terms of ministry, she's involved in that group that's there, and it's a great opportunity. But there is a... And that's where I'm kind of trying to work because it seems like as I listen to her heart on that, there is almost a dependence upon the family or a preconceived idea that there'll be something that's there family-wise. See, my older four kids all went to Nebraska. And then Emily goes to Creighton, and my youngest went to South Dakota State. And so there's a lot of the thing, she expresses things like, I'm missing out on some things that are going on family-wise. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not really the case. And so what I also struggle with is the balance, because I don't want her to be dependent upon that. I don't know whether I'm able to describe for you.
Probably not. I don't know. I don't have a clear... That's what's being stirred in you.
Yes.
I don't want to try to be a solution guy here. The thing is I'm still curious about the events. Events happen in life. Events happen. And we feel things because of the events. We end up doing things. We do behavior usually because of the events. That's what happens. And if I was sitting with your daughter, I'd be wanting to know the events that go on that have been painful for her, just like my granddaughter. Ashton, talk about some of the things that have been really hard for you this year. So that's where my head would go. Maybe you've already done that, but it it's just where I'm at. I mean, I understand that's a stirring in you, but I kind of want to move, try to move on.
Two things I mentioned picked up is, like the first gentleman was focused on balancing work and career, properly balancing work and career, so that work and career is not even close to being as high of a priority as kids are, so I don't become basically that type of father, an emotionally detached father. I am a type A personality, so I'm a striver, hard worker, and all that kind of stuff. I have noticed that in myself even lately. So yeah, I think it's going to be a challenge for me for many years ahead, recognizing that myself, recognizing my own personality, and knowing when to hit the brakes.
You're not alone, and this is why I don't know what kind of community you guys are all in, but it's okay to share. I mean, to share these things. Say, this is, I'm really struggling here, but don't accept quick advice from people. Say that's not helpful. You know, man up and say, no, that's not helpful for me right now. I mean, we all want offered quick advice. Even me, when I'm caught up in the moment, I'll say, you know, this is what you ought to do. But just be curious. Don't walk by the room. Walk in, grab your kids, say, how's it going? Throw them to the floor and, you know, wrestle. I mean, just connection. I mean, it's, yeah. Rick, you already spoke before, but...
Your point is what you said about processing your own wounds before you intervene with others at a heart level. And I think I've dealt with most of mine at this stage of life. Maybe not.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I ever dealt with how that might have impacted what I passed on. Adult kids, so I
want to
figure out how to engage them a little better.
Engage them. Sit with them. Ask them. Talk to them. Tell them you want more. You want more. We settle for two less.
I think it's been interesting as you help us identify the different quadrants that I've found myself when challenged with our children that I tend to revert back. Where I was and think that that's the right position to come from. So this has been really helpful to increase the awareness.
Yeah, that's my whole goal. Yeah. Go.
Oh, just what you said about asking open-ended questions all the time. Not to assume that if my kids have a problem, they're going to come tell me without asking them first from time to time. I think Jim do a better job of that.
Go ahead.
Thanks. I was just thinking about how powerful the impact is when you are abandoned. My parents divorced when I was about 3 or 4, and so I don't really have any memories of them together. And after that, my dad basically took us, and so I remember years and years of going to bed, you know, as a teenager, just in tears, wondering. I would just cry myself to sleep. And I would wonder where my mom was, why she wasn't there. And there were some pretty big events in my life where everybody's gone through basic training. You feel proud at the end. I graduated from college, and after both of those events, really felt like he should have been there. He wasn't.
That's stirred a lot up in you, hasn't it? Wow. How many kids do you have? Do you have
two?
Boys or girls?
I have a 5-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son.
That's right there in that hurt and anger. Are you part of a community of guys somewhere? Or?
Yeah.
Or are you?
Group.
Yeah. Paul, could you pray for, just
sure.
Lift him up before the Lord here.
Lord, I pray for David. I get to feel with him. I pray, God, that you just be with him and enable him to break that pattern in his own family and to find the grace to move forward. I pray in Jesus' name.
Amen. Yes, Jesus. Hey, thanks for offering that. Wow. Sometimes it's hard to go on and go around the room, right? I get my little template. Yeah, it stirs a lot of things. Thanks. Mike?
I would say just kind of looking back at the wounds that I have, just reflecting on it. I think that one thing that I can learn applies to my life in the future is to start early. So I know that I was a really rebellious child in my teenage years. If my parents noticed that, they actually had some pamphlets on how to, I noticed them, deal with teenager or rebellious child. They tried to turn me away from not being rebellious and not getting into trouble and whatnot. But the thing that kind of speaks to me is I know that there was no chance that they could just because they started too late.
And what would it have looked like? They started too late, man. What would you have loved to have happen, if it could have happened? Attention, involvement in your life. Yeah. Yeah. So this definitely stirs up stuff in you a lot. Yeah, but it's interesting, as you tell your story, I'm hearing they have the pamphlets, but even then, like, why not come and say, you know, we're going to, what's your first name again, Mike? Yeah, Mike, can we talk a little bit? We're so concerned, we don't know what to do. We have these books, but what the heck, we have no idea what we're doing, and we want to enter. Yeah, we're confused, we're frustrated, we love you, we don't know what to do. Can we just get together, pray with their believers? I don't know, just enter. I mean, you know what? Feel uncomfortable. Feel inadequate. Part of being a man is in being feeling inadequate and knowing that we can walk with the Lord. We can walk forward, and it's scary. I mean, I've shared my failures up here. Hopefully, you guys can be encouraged that even at a late age, you can still see healing. There can still be healing in your relationships. There still can. Anyway, thanks for offering that. Anthony.
I never really knew my father. He met my mom before I was born. And I had a stepdad that was since I was two, but he used to abuse me until I was about 15, and then I fought back, and he's like, oh, crap, stop this. And recently I moved here to Shelby. Well, it's not here, so I was like, my cousin Billy, little cousin, lives in Columbus with his dad. His dad is in the greatest town. His little brother's horrible to him. His mom's never home. And he always wants me to come over and take him outside for the basketball. And I guess I didn't really think it meant that much to him, it mattered that much, but I see he probably sees me as a type of father figure.
Oh my gosh. You bet. You bet. You're a man in the gap. Wow. What a calling. Yeah. Then, you know, you're offering your own heart out of your own wounds, too. So, wow. Okay, thanks.
I've got two kids, 10 and 12. One of the things we've observed last year, our kids are in two different schools, and Dan talks about it. Now she picks one up, and then she picks the other one up, and that they... She gets lots more communication because she's one-on-one.
you know, there's days when I'm present, but I'm not there emotionally, and I see it, and there's times, like trying to put them in the bed, and my thing is to get them in the bed so they can get up in the morning in time, and she says, that's when they're going to talk.
Yeah.
You need to sit there and listen.
No, good. Just wanted to see what was stirring in your heart. Go ahead. Next. They want to speak up a little bit. I know John has a hard time hearing. We only have, like, go ahead.
So my parents are divorced. So I grew up, and, you know, my dad, but, you know, I really don't have a very good relationship with him. And, yeah, I don't want that to go all the way down to the kids.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I guess what this all stirs up in me is the changes that my dad decided to make because of my grandfather's decisions. He worked construction and on the road all the time, so he wasn't home, and when he was a very good father. And had 11 kids, so we need to divide that by 11. So he made the decision to instill a lot of, I guess, of what you're talking about. And I'm just extremely grateful that he did that. He did a very good job because I see my grandfather's reflection of all my uncles. And
have you told your dad that? There. Have you told your dad you appreciated that in him?
Not directly, I guess.
You need to. My son Wesley said to me, amidst all the stuff that hasn't gone right, he said, one thing, Dad, you're a faithful man. And he listed the areas that I've been faithful in and a few of the other things, one being faithful to Mom through a lot of hard times and being faithful and in some other areas of life too. But it's good to, it's good for a father to hear that. So, thanks. What's your first name?
Kristen.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about this much before, so this will be, you know, good to think about it, so I can, if I ever have a family, I can think about this as I go see my kids and work on it. So thank you.
Okay.
My name is Arlen.
Arlen.
And my parenting is pretty well done. My youngest child is a stepchild, and she is just graduating from high school. I have kind of a unique perspective, and I'm old enough to have known my grandfather pretty well and my father pretty well, and now my son's starting their family. And I guess I feel like I did a pretty good job in a lot of areas, but I did a really poor job in a few others. The emotionally present was pretty much a thumbs down. And I can see now, after having gotten to know my dad better and having him describe his father, my grandfather,
mm-hmm.
It's been a trait that's been passed down, so I'm thinking, I need to tell my sons what I've left them with for a legacy as far as how they're going to relate to their wives and when they do have children, how that's going to affect it. So I'm really interested in that aspect particularly, and how this can be, I can at least throw up a flag for them to say, you need to let the Lord lead you on this because I didn't.
Wow, yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, I will, the thing that's in my mind and my guts that I want to say, I just say to you is that you're always a parent. I've got a son who's 38 or 39. I'm always a parent. I mean, we're always a parent. And it's never too late. You can't enter in. I think our children are willing to talk about these areas that have been hard. They'll also talk about the things that they've... That was my last interview. Hey, what did you take away from my relationship that drew you closer to God? It was good to hear some of that, but what really drew you away from God? What was the thing that was painful for you? But
I was in my 40s before my dad really shared much about how he felt about his life.
Yeah.
There's some things that I could just never understand about him. I just don't understand it. I guess I'm never going to get that close. But now when I hear those from his emotional perspective, I think, oh, that makes perfect sense. And that's what I want to be able to offer my sons, is a little bit of insight into my life during those times when they were growing up, so maybe they can have the same kind of moment.
Right. Sons want to know, and daughters too, but they want to know who we are. Now we're going back, the gentleman there. I didn't. What is your name?
Steve.
Steve.
Yeah. Straight up question.
I don't know if I can answer it, but.
Two boys, 14 years apart, fully present in both situations, both lives. Not so much engaged in the 30-year-old, the 15-year-old, more so engaged.
Uh-huh.
But here's the deal. I have a wife that is fully engaged.
Uh-huh.
I mean, really fully engaged.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and in some ways, that's really positive because
yes.
I learn a lot about asking questions and the right questions. Is there any danger in being imbalanced?
Yes. You got to bring some things to balance. You got to enter in as sloppy as it is.
Yeah, well, I'm improving in that, but I mean, she's still.
I know. You don't need to bring her. You just need to enter in.
Yeah.
You need to go to her and say, hey, I know you see things. I need to. Because only a dad has that more influence. We're kind of coming up against it, but I wanted to give everybody a chance to talk. So if you guys, can you bear with that? Just a maybe one item or something that's been stirred, what's been provoked in you. Guys, thanks for offering what you did, and I have more to say. There's a back page here that's about styles of parenting. I can't get to it, all right? I can't get to it, but here's the deal. Let me put, I came across an out-of-print workbook that uses a lot of stuff from parenting adolescents. It's out of print. I bought a case of them. This is something you can work through, has a lot of the principles I talked about, by yourself or with your wife, it is simple enough to do. The stuff in Huggins' book and his videos, and they're more clips to be used with the material. That's a harder piece to do. But if you're interested, I'll send you one of these. Here's my email. It's cepinj@juno.com. I'm still a Juno guy. It would also help you a little bit on that chart would be a little bit more explained. I think I have the same. Let me just double check and make sure I have the same chart. High, low, involvement, responsiveness, yes. Go in peace, and may you stay close to God and be courageous fathers, okay? And sons.